From aviation to Zen, the Boston Center for Adult Education offers a wide variety of daytime and evening classes. BZ suggests you call 267-4430 for a free course booklet.
Vice President Spiro Agnew has accused Senator George McGovern of being naive about foreign relations with the Soviet Union. In a speech at San Antonio to the National Defense Transportation Association Forum, Agnew insisted the U.S. must always negotiate peace from a position of military strength. Democratic presidential nominee Sergeant Shriver made his second visit in 4 days to Texas Monday. Shriver told 170 union leaders in Corpus Christi that a vote for Nixon would be a vote against themselves. Officials of the United Auto Workers and General Motors reached tentative agreement Monday on the longest strike in the automaker's history. The 172-day-old walkout of an assembly plant at Norwood, Ohio, involves about 4,000 workers. A team of surgeons stood by the bed of a seriously injured Canadian doctor in Bangor, Maine, Monday, waiting for the physician to die. When he died from auto wreck injuries, the team began removing his kidneys and eyes. The doctor's family had given permission for his organs to be used for transplant when it became obvious he would not live. The weather for Boston and vicinity for the rest of this morning, partly cloudy, lowest temperatures in the low 60s, gentle southerly winds. Tuesday, considerable cloudiness, warm and humid, highest temperatures 75 to 80. Tuesday night, chance of showers, lowest temperatures in the 60s. Wednesday, chance of showers or thunderstorms, followed by partial clearing and turning cooler, highest temperatures in the 70s. Right now in Boston, it's 68. On the BZ scoreboard, Major League Baseball, Texas 2, correction, California 2, Texas 1, and in pro football, Kansas City 20, New Orleans 17. That's it, sports fans. The top story of the hour, Secretary of State Rogers went into a nearly three-hour-long meeting with Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko late Monday. And that's the 2 o'clock WBZ report. I'm Streeter Glick, WBZ News. Avoid the October 15th rush and get your fall inspection sticker now. We now present a WBZ editorial by our general manager, Cy Yano.
WBZ TV has begun its impact week on youth. And whenever the subject of young people comes up, you don't have to wait long for the hand-wringing to start. A while back, we came across one interesting summary of the public attitude toward youth. Children now have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for adults and love to talk rather than work or exercise. They contradict their parents and intimidate their teachers. All that sounds pretty contemporary, doesn't it? In fact, those words were written by Socrates 4 centuries before the birth of Christ. We didn't drag out that ancient quote to play down the real problems of today's young people. But a few points should be made. First of all, laments about the state of contemporary youth have been going on now for 25 centuries. In all that time, we suspect the large majority have been made the scapegoats for the antics of a minority. Growing up is a struggle, but most of our youth handle it remarkably well. More and more young people today are sensitive to social problems and moral wrongs. They're often looking for ways to serve and be useful. It's tragic we have failed to provide more outlets for this type of activity. The problems of youth are often a reflection of the adult world. If many of our young people are obsessed with alcohol, drugs, and sex, it's appropriate to ask who taught them. The answer is obvious. So maybe the time has come for less hand-wringing about youth, a lot more concern about the way we adults run our own lives, and thus what we communicate to the younger generation.
That's how WBZ sees it. We recognize our obligation to broadcast opposing opinions. Once again, back to the Larry Glick Show, and let's see who our first caller is on this portion of the program. Hello? You're on the air.
Oh, Larry.
Yes?
Oh, listen, I'm calling from Chicago.
Chicago, Chicago's a heck of a town.
Scooby-O-Doo. Right, love it out here. Remember Whiskey Man?
Who?
Whiskey Man?
Whiskey Man, yes.
From Chicago?
Yes.
I'm Dave's roommate.
You're kidding.
No. We're both Dave's. We live in here together, and,
Whiskey Man is from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I remember.
We're both from the same town, Lancaster, where the Amish are.
Lancaster?
Yeah, remember you were talking about the Amish one night?
Yes, I do. I remember that. What's happening there? What happened there?
I don't know.
My ears are cracking through. What's happening, Bob? That went right through my head. That piercing sound went from here right through. What is that?
I think there's a storm somewhere between
us. A storm between us?
Yeah.
Oh, piercing sound. Went from my left ear to my right ear. Piercing, right through it.
We're supposed to get some pretty bad rains out here tonight.
I met a fellow named John Pappas today. He's with another radio station. He said that he used to listen when he went to Chicago. He used to tune in WBZ.
Yeah, we're having no trouble getting you tonight. There's a real heavy cloud covering, and I think that's helping or something.
Where are you, what part of Chicago? Are you
right in the loop.
Right in the loop, and you can pick it up clearly.
Oh, yeah, we usually have no problem, but it's pretty strong tonight. Dave's Whiskey Man is in another part of the building recording this right now.
Oh, Whiskey Man? Did you ever meet anyone named Whiskey Man before? What's his first name?
Dave.
Dave Whiskey Man from Pennsylvania.
Right.
Does he drink?
Well, I don't know.
What's the drinking limit in, what's the age limit in Illinois? 21. How old are you?
19.
Yeah, tell me the truth. What's your name?
Dave
what?
Harnish.
Harnish?
Yeah.
Dave Harnish from Amish.
Harnish.
Harnish from Amish.
From near the Amish.
You're an Amish, are you, Harnish?
No.
Oh. Do you like the Amish people, Harnish?
Well... Harnish.
Harnish, I saw. Well, it's pretty close. Harnish,
right.
Garnish, Harnish. Do you like the Amish people, Harnish?
Well, you don't really get to really interact too much because they, by their own beliefs, want to pretty much stay by themselves. They don't like the tourists in the area, and I really don't blame them. They're pretty much abused by the tourists.
How are they abused, Harnish?
Well, there's an awful lot of profit being made off of the fact that they're terribly unique, and they're trying to keep that uniqueness to themselves. I mean, it's a sincere belief to them, and there are an awful lot of people making a big profit off of that.
How do they make profits? I'd like to go in there and see if I can pick up a few bucks myself. What's the best
way,
Harnish?
Well, actually, the Amish are thinking about leaving the area because of that.
Where would they go?
Several of them have already left the country because of that, but out here in Illinois and Wisconsin, I think there are, and also I think Indiana, there are several other large Amish communities, but Pennsylvania supposedly has the largest.
You said they're leaving the country. Where?
Some of them have been leaving for South America, Colombia, specifically.
That's amazing, you know that?
But
you have to realize that. I mean, they're Americans, and...
Yeah, right.
And if they live differently than the rest of us, people are just curious. They want to see how they live and why they live that way.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that.
How can you make a profit on it? That's what I want to know, honey.
Well, there's, I don't know, tourism seems to be one of the biggest trades in our area. I mean,
what's wrong with that? People go out there and they see them. They're very nice, right? What are they? They don't pick on them. They don't laugh at them. They don't hurt them. They want to plow their fields with oxen.
Right.
With horse. Let them plow it.
Right.
I was out there. I was down at Host Farm.
Yeah, Host Farm, right.
I watched. I walked around. I spoke, and they said, how art thee? I said,
right.
Yeah. I said, thee speaks funny.
Right.
And then they, I watched them. You know, I didn't say anything. I watched them plow their fields with a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked like hard workers and nice people, you know. But, I just looked at them.
Yeah, they are. They're really hard workers.
After I looked at them for a short time with that horse and walking behind it, you know, I got exhausted and I walked away. I got in my car and drove away.
Yeah. They're really interesting people.
I think they are, too.
They
live in a community that live in the United States. Well, we have more physical comforts than any other country in the world. And they remain this way. I mean,
yeah, they shun all.
Can you imagine a whole country full of Amish if we were all Amish?
Yeah.
The Indians would take over the country. They'd attack us.
maybe the resources wouldn't be as used up.
That's right, but I mean, we'd all be speaking Chinese or Russian right now.
True, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's very interesting. It was really...
That's why it's interesting. We want to see these things harnessed. Why? How can people live in the midst of this thing and still live the way they did two or three or four centuries ago?
That's
right?
What they're doing.
Huh?
That's what they're doing.
And they're very prejudiced too, right? They don't want
to say the least.
They don't let their children take a look at anything else. They don't give them a chance to expose themselves to a different type of life. They can, no, thou shan't. Thou shan't.
Well, usually,
thou can'st.
Yeah, like Dave was telling you that night,
usually they
get a fling. They almost all take at least one really big fling. But the majority of them, I read a study on it, and the majority of them, even though they do that, end up back in the faith again. They go away for a period of time, away from the faith of their parents, but they usually almost all end up back with their parents again in terms of the religion.
What is their religion?
Pardon?
They're Quakers, huh?
No, Amish is their religion.
Oh, the Amish religion.
Yeah, they're the Amish, and the other plain people in the area are the Mennonites, which is a larger,
right,
nationally.
Well,
larger.
The Amish is a fragment of the Mennonites, right?
I think the Mennonites were first.
Right, that's
Menno,
true.
Simon Menno's or something.
Yeah, the Mennonites were first, and then came the Amish.
Yeah, they broke away from the Mennonites.
Right.
But they're all there are quite a few of the smaller sects. Religious sects represented there in that area. The Quakers have a good following there.
Isn't that funny? They all settled in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, well, my ninth grandfather,
yes,
great-grandfather, was the first settler in Lancaster County.
You're kidding, Harnish.
His name was Hans Herr.
Hans Herr?
Yeah, and he settled
What there year was that, Hans?
1719.
Huh?
1719.
You're
settled.
Kidding.
In Lancaster County. The house he originally built is still standing there. They've finally taken a lot of care with it, and it's become sort of a landmark.
Are you a Quaker, Dave?
Not by original faith, but I have become one.
You're a Quaker now?
Yeah.
I have to give you a round of applause. You're the first Quaker, you and President Nixon.
Yeah, well, there's something about
a Quaker.
That. Quaker? Yeah. Not by my parents, though. I mean, this is something on my own.
What religion are your parents?
My parents are Methodist.
How old were you when you became a Quaker, and why?
Well, I am, if you can define the word, a pacifist. And
yeah.
I became very much involved in that about the time I was in ninth grade. And struggled through to get classified as a conscientious objector. And became affiliated with the Quakers before the time I tried to get my CO status, but I was advised against joining them at that time for fear that it might look insincere on my part, even though it was, and I could understand that, so I waited for a while then and got my status as a conscientious objector first. But this is something, well, it's grown on me for a long time, but I guess ninth grade was about the first time I realized it in high school.
You know, Dave, I like you very much, Dave. You're a nice kid, and I like you, but now what if we had a whole country full of conscientious objectors? What would happen here? What if everyone stopped, said, okay, all right, we will not fight. We will not do anything. I mean, we'll just be nice little kids.
Well, I don't think that, I mean, I try to be realistic about it.
Attaboy, that's what I like. That's why I mentioned it to you, because you're an intelligent kid. Go ahead.
I try to be realistic about it, and I don't think, you know, that's physically possible, at least not at this time.
Right. You don't want everyone to be, you don't want the United States government to become conscientious objectors.
Well, I don't think it's practical at this time.
That's
true. I would like it.
Very good, because I'm a man of peace, too, but we have to be practical now, right? We have to be able to...
The point is, though, and this is what I usually say to answer something like that, I feel that there always will be wars of some sort.
That's true.
For eternity.
Right.
But that does not say that I should resign myself to not work against it. I should still do whatever I feel I can, my small part, to try and solve things without wars, whatever my small part might be. In other words, there will always be wars, realistically,
that's
yes.
True.
And there will always be a call for men to fight wars.
That's true.
But still, I can't resign myself to that and just accept it as that. I must still do my part, whatever I feel it can be at any time, to attempt to at least slow down the rate that they occur or whatever. And I think that's a realistic position that is in keeping with my own conscience. But I personally couldn't take up arms in that sort of a thing. I feel.
But you'd help out though in the medical corps or something like that.
Yeah, I'm perfectly willing, as my draft board knows, to perform well nearly any type of alternative service in that sort of line, as a conscientious objector must be willing to do.
Let me see. As a conscientious objector, I mean, not as a, no, as a Quaker. Just basically, how does your religion differ from your folks' religion?
Well, the Friends, as their other name is the best way of putting it. To me, the Quaker faith is a more sincere, or the way I like to usually put it is that the Quaker faith is I think the closest thing that exists right now to the original Christian church. I think it's basically a philosophy of forming and maintaining simple friendships between people, communication. The Methodists, I get very frustrated with the Methodists. I became very frustrated with the Methodists. It's more of a church oriented towards property. I should say at least my own congregation was. It was very much oriented towards property, gains, and that sort of thing. And I saw it really sort of passing away, passing sort of out of existence. The youth were being pulled away, and we tried to do things, but the older people in the church would stop us. They wouldn't let us try to become more relevant to kids our own age and so forth, and it became very frustrating. We tried for years and nothing ever came of it. There was such a strong control, such a resistance to any sort of change, or even rather a resistance to accepting ideas for change, not even the changes themselves, but even talking about it. There was a strong resistance there, and there was always a feeling, at least for me, of...
Dave?
Yeah.
Let me say, we have a call coming in from Chicago. Oh, let me see, is Whiskeyman listening? Is he Amish?
No. Whiskeyman was brought up Catholic. I'm not sure what he is right now.
What do you think he is?
I think his feelings are basically almost entirely the same way mine are.
How about that? You both have Hebrew names, David, right?
Yeah,
David,
right.
Whiskeyman, David Harnish.
Yeah, it means beloved.
Beloved is right.
Right.
Here's what I'll do, because I'd like to talk to you a little later this morning. But we have our station in Chicago. This is really interesting. You're calling from Chicago, right?
Right.
We have is that our pal from is that Larry the Legend, Bob? Larry the Legend?
Which one?
That's this. You want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
Hello, Whiskey Man. Where is he? Upstairs?
He's out there listening to the radio now.
He's out there listening. Well, listen, I'm going to switch you over to get Larry the Legend. He's at WYND in Chicago. That's
yeah.
Our sister station there. And what I'll do, you stay on.
Okay.
And give Muck your phone number.
All right.
We'll call you back after 3 o'clock. Maybe after the con. We'll call you back soon, okay?
Okay, 3 o'clock your time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe a little later, because I think we have a guest. We may chat with him for a little bit. But we'll call you back, because I want to know more about the Quakers and thee.
All right.
Yeah. Let me see now. But have Whiskeyman listen to the conversation on WYND, too. Both there and here. Do you understand what I'm talking about, David?
All right. I think I gather you.
So long, Amish.
Okay.
Stay on the line and give Muck your phone number.
Okay.
Sometimes I get excited. I don't know why. Hello, TV Control.
Wait a minute. All right. All right, Larry the Legend. Get those people to crank it up now. Get, because I can't hear you, you rib. I can't hear you.
Hey, sir, can you hear me now?
No, I can't.
All right, we'll get him to turn us up some more. Can you hear me now, Streeter?
Oh, just one decibel.
All right, well, I'll speak up louder. We have a problem, sir.
Yes?
There are two men here in jail that got in a little trouble, and they said they're friends of yours, and they need some money to get them bailed out.
Well, I help people out, but it's 5 for 7. I give, it's 5 for 7 on payday. Yes, sir?
Well, there are a couple of really funny guys, Marsh and Adams.
Marsh and Adams, tell them, listen, tell Marsh and Adams that if they're from the North End, it's 5 for 6. 5 for 6, we give them a $1 break. 5 for 6, we give them a $1 break.
Lou or Tony, do y'all have something to say to Streeter?
I just want to tell him, where was he? We were up there for a whole week at the Swift Club, and he never showed up. I want to punch him in the nose.
Hey, I was, when you were here, I was in Israel. No, I was taking some fresh money from the North End, and I was giving it out 5 for 7 all through Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Hey, now, how come you're out of Miami? Get back into Miami. What are you doing up here in Chicago?
In Chicago, we're up here with Bobby McNair. We'll be here for 2 weeks at the most gorgeous hotel you'll ever see in your life.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold it. Hey, you want to hear something? My engineer... I don't know what they're doing there, but they can't hear you. Would you ask them to crank it up, please? My engineer says, I can't hear them.
Okay, they're cranking it up some more here as much as our engineer can be near.
Hey, how come, listen, how come we call on a regular line and we can never hear you, Larry the Legend?
We're going to have to get our engineers together because our engineers blame your engineers and your engineers blame our engineers, and I love everybody. You know, I can't touch your equipment. I don't know anything about it.
Oh, and Bob Gray said it's the phone company.
Hey, Jerry, we're blaming them. They're good.
Yes.
All right. And Larry, yes, sir. Larry, Glick, can you hear us at all?
Yeah,
you can hear us fine. Now, go ahead. Larry?
Yes, sir?
Yeah, I'm just following my truck.
What?
The one with the funny Boston accent is Glick. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can't. Listen, are you in the studio or are you at the nightclub?
We're at the nightclub talking to Larry, the legend down here, and we decided we'd call you. Now, we've got a four-way conversation. And I just found out we're not even hooked up.
Well, you are. You're hooked up into Stella's. And it's just the only people who are listening are down at Stella's.
Yeah. I thought Joe Tetchy would be thrown in.
Well, Joe Tetchy's working there. He's the head waiter now. I wish I could hear these two guys. I wish I could hear... Yeah?
Listen, I guess we're having some technical things. One of these days, our engineers will straighten it out. But listen, hey, Streeter, good night, and I'll go ahead and make the barn and send you a bill.
Bye-bye. So long, Lou. So long, Tony.
Oh, what a shame. Marston Adams, they're from this area. It seems like a local show there. Everything's coming from Chicago to Boston. Chicago. Okay, a little later we'll call this kid Amish the Amish and Whiskey Man. Amish and Whiskey Man. Bob, would you stop yawning? I'm trying to get something exciting here, and Bob's yawning. You're not yawning? 254-5678. Hello, WBZ, you're on the air.
Amish and Whiskey
Man. Hello? Hello, come in if you can hear me.
I'm trying to get something exciting.
Hello once, hello twice. I didn't even ask you. Let's take another call. 254-5678. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Glick.
Yes.
How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good.
Huh?
See, you're looking good.
Thank you very much.
Wait a minute, how are you?
Okay.
I was just calling from Whiskey, Ontario, Kansas.
You what?
I say, I was just calling from Whiskey, Ontario, Kansas.
You were calling from there?
Yeah.
Ontario, Canada?
Yeah, Whiskey.
The first time caller?
Yeah, right.
What do you do up there, kid?
I work at Chrysler.
Huh?
I work at Chrysler of Canada.
You work for Chrysler of Canada?
Right.
What do you do?
Just a factory worker, that's all.
Oh, yeah? You don't sound very enthused about anything, kid.
Listen, you were just talking from to Chicago, eh?
Yes, right.
Well, you're talking to that kid, that Methodist.
Right.
Yeah, talking
he's not a Methodist now. He's a Quaker.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Well, my dad's from Chicago. He was born there.
Oh? How come he left Chicago for Canada?
Well, he left there when he was about 6 years old, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But you were trying to get a hold of your mayor in...
Who?
Your mayor?
Yes.
In Moscow.
Moscow.
Yeah.
Do you have a tip? Do you know where we might get him?
No, but I just wondering, if you couldn't get a hold of him, could you get a hold of Bobby Orr or Esposito?
And Bobby Orr?
Or Esposito.
Or Esposito.
Yeah.
I hate to say this about Esposito. I heard a couple of things that weren't too complimentary. I can't mention on the air. But I hope it's not true.
Can't mention it.
Huh?
You can't mention it.
No, because it wouldn't be a good taste, but...
Yeah, right.
If what I heard is true about Esposito and Cheevers, I have a special salute for both of them. They get... Both of them get the Larry Glick salute.
Right.
If it was true.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know. I would try to get someone over there. You don't, if you knew what hotel they're staying at, Mike, I mean, see, in order for me to get them, I don't even know the name of one hotel.
Yeah, that thing makes me mad, too. I was going through the papers, you know, like, it was in the papers where the fans were staying and where the players were staying, and, you know?
Yeah.
And where the VIPs were staying.
Right.
But I couldn't find the stupid thing, you know?
Oh, because I just can't say, I'd like to speak to Mayor Kevin White. He'd
yeah.
say, all right, Kevin White, where is he? What hotel?
Yeah.
I said, Tavarich, I don't know. If you don't know, we couldn't help you. So, I don't know the name of one hotel. I don't think there's the Moscow Hilton. I don't think that Mr. Hilton put one there.
No, I don't think there's one there. I was in Boston there about 4 years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Me and a friend of mine took
it. What'd you think of our city? Pretty nice?
Oh,
tell me the truth.
It's really nice.
Really nice?
People are really, really friendly.
Friendly, right.
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
We said the Sheridan, I guess it was.
Well, listen, kid, I want to thank you very, very much, and I want you to keep listening and keep those Chryslers coming. You understand?
Yeah, listen, you have a very good show. We really like it up there.
Whereabouts in Ontario?
Whitby.
Huh?
Whitby.
I don't get the first...
Whitby.
Whitby.
Right.
Spell that Whitby, please.
W-H-I-T-B-Y.
Whitby. How big is... That's a little hamlet.
It's about 25,000. It's about 30 miles from Toronto.
Are there any other people in that place that listen to the program at night?
I guess so.
Are you not sure?
Yeah, there is. There's quite a few, yeah.
Oh. I'd like that. How many miles from Boston would you say that place is? Would be?
Something like 1,000, I guess.
1,000 miles away.
Something like that.
Are you an Eskimo?
Are you kidding? No. Brown like one, though, I guess.
Huh?
I've got to get tan like one, I guess.
How do you get the tan?
Beautiful weather up here in summer.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much, and you keep listening. Spread the word up there, would you, please?
Don't have to. You're coming
in
loud and clear.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So long.
If you can't read the print in a newspaper but like to stay informed, BZ suggests you call the Mass Association for the Blind telephone tape at 542-0424.
At your house, when the family dinner is over and you walk out into the kitchen, are you greeted by a pile of pots and pans and casseroles covered with gunky, baked-on soil? You need a Westinghouse Power Soap dishwasher. With a Westinghouse, you simply load the pots and pans into the dishwasher right along with your dishes and glasses. Then you set the power soak cycle, and the dishwasher does the rest. It combines precisely the right amounts of water, detergent, temperature, and washing time, and gives the pots and pans an extra powerful cleaning. When the cycle is completed, the pots are clean and the dishes and glasses are sparkling. The power soak cycle is just one of 6 push-button controls that give you the wash cycles for every washing need. And best of all, the Westinghouse dishwasher is convertible. You can use it as a portable and at any time quickly and easily convert it to a built-in installation. You can be sure if it's Westinghouse. The station New England depends on for news. WBZ Boston, Group W, Westinghouse Broadcasting.
Meet the Philadelphia 76ers tonight on WBZ Boston.
Good boy, Gil Santos. It's 2:31. Let's listen to great moments in radio, and then we'll be back with some swell calls. And let's see, at 3 o'clock we have a special guest down in Knoxville, Kentucky, a former assistant attorney general down there, Carl Greenwell. Retired from the law practice, and now he practices hypnosis full-time. We'll have a little interview with him. He did something that's quite interesting. He helped a person who was suffering with hiccups for 12 days. No one could stop this guy. No one could stop him. He did it using hypnosis and electronic metronome. We'll get the story behind the story. Let's listen to Great Moments in Radio. We'll be right back. Why don't you go have a snack yourself?
For many great inventions. The ladies in particular took to their hearts one such development, the daytime serial. Now, this kind of drama was unique and owed its success, I imagine, to the fact that it dwelt on real kinds of problems that were solved 5 days a week. The characters became family friends. Listeners wrote with advice, sent anniversary gifts, holiday cards, and remembered birthdays. It didn't take long for the daytime serial to be known affectionately as the soap opera, named after the sponsors. Let's listen in.
Oh, Lorenzo Jones. The rocky road that winds through Joyland Amusement Park, the Jones' latest venture, is paved with good intentions, the chief of which is Lorenzo's plan to sell his newly discovered sulfur water as a cure-all. He's persuaded Bell to let him try it out, using their chicken barbecue stand as a base for operations. Lorenzo's nephew, Henry Whitcomb, thinks, as always, that his Uncle Lorenzo has something there. Henry's wife, Nellie, suddenly stage-struck, is interested in a screen test ever since a moving picture director working with a group of actors in Townsville has casually asked Nellie to come over and watch them work. Today, Lorenzo, Belle, and Henry are at the barbecue stand preparing for the first customers to try out Lorenzo's sulfur water. Let's listen.
All right, Henry, now if you'll grab hold of the other end of this barrel of salt water, we'll set it right here on the counter of the barbecue stand.
Now, Lorenzo, you and Henry be careful. Don't knock over those glasses and dishes I've stacked up.
All right, we'll be careful, Aunt Belle.
Easy, Henry. Henry, turn to this side with the figure facing us.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, my good wife, we're ready for the crowd that'll come here today to try out my sulfur water.
Well, dear, I only hope your new health drink won't interfere with the sale of my barbecue chicken.
Well, Ben, you see, the healthier they get imbibing my super sulfur potion, the more portions of chicken we'll sell.
That's right, Uncle Lorenzo. The healthier I feel, the more I want to eat. Gee, do you think we'll have a big crowd out here today?
Big crowd, Henry. Well, here comes the first auto of the cavalcade now. Right. You'll find people coming out in droves, thanks to the power of American advertising genius. Another $50 worth of handbills judiciously distributed, and we'll have everybody in the world calling for sulfur water.
Well, dear, maybe you're right, but aren't we supposed to have a permit or a license to sell a health drink?
What, a permit to help people regain their vim, vigor, vitality? Well, Bill, who ever heard of the Good Samaritan with a druggist license,
well,
huh?
Well, I suppose I'm wrong, but things are always happening to us.
The following program will be interrupted for any important war bulletins. And now, the romance of Helen Trent. The romance of Helen Trent. The real-life drama of Helen Trent, who, when life mocks her, breaks her hopes, dashes her against the rocks of despair, fights back bravely, successfully, to prove what so many women long to prove in their own lives, that because a woman is 35 or more, romance in life need not be over. That romance can begin at 35.
Now for our story of Gus Flame Bill. Danger threatens Bill Davidson and Nancy, his beloved daughter, and Carrie Donovan, her husband, because of the mysterious, sinister actions of Ira Brewster, who beat Carrie for district attorney by lying about Nancy's supposed parentage.
Why, it's you, Mr. Willoughby.
Hello, Bill.
Well, I didn't expect to see you way down here in Hartsville again tonight. Why, you look all in.
I am rather tired, Bill. Been a long, confusing day for me.
Here, Mr. Willoughby. Sit down. Let me call Nancy. She's back in the kitchen. I'll have her bring in some hot coffee. Maybe you'd like something to eat.
Oh, no, Bill. Thanks. Don't bother Nancy.
Oh, Nancy will want to hear whatever you've got to tell me. Oh, Nancy.
Yes, Daddy. What is it?
Mr. Willoughby's here. You better come in. Oh, and bring some coffee, will you?
Oh, yes, Daddy. I'll be in a minute.
Life was never simple and easy for the real-life characters in our soap operas. Marriage, separation, illness, even death played a part. The heroines came from all walks of life, even from the theater itself.
And now, Mary Noble, backstage wife. Mary has been the victim of a false friend, Armand Dalubac, who took her diamond engagement ring with the promise of having it repaired. But instead, Armand pawned the ring and tried to blackmail Mary and Larry. And when Marcia Mannering tried to make it appear that Mary was in love with Armand and had given the ring to him, she turned Larry violently against her. And thereupon, Marcia conspired with Armand to get even with Mary and Larry. When Mary and Larry later discover that the ring has disappeared from the shop, Mary is heartbroken. And Larry resolves at last to notify the police.
Well, Mary, here's our story in all the afternoon papers.
Yes, Larry, I've seen it.
Famous actor reports theft of wife's jewels to police. Very concise and accurate statement of fact, I'd say. And you certainly can't feel that this is very damaging publicity.
You got around it very nicely, Larry.
Well, the police have cooperated, too, not revealing anything to the press except what's printed right here.
But why still have the stinking feeling that something bad's about to happen, Larry? That doom's hanging over our heads.
Well, I've managed so far to keep those reporters from getting a hold of me. They've been banging at the door all morning, clamoring for more details. But if I can just continue to duck them, I don't think that any more will leak out.
Well, it's not only the reporters I'm afraid of.
What do you mean? You're taking this thing awfully hard, Mary.
Oh, Larry, what's going to happen when or if the police do catch Armand or whoever it is that has my ring?
Well, we'll just get the ring back and prosecute the scoundrel, that's all.
But don't you see, you'll still have to go through all that mess of a criminal trial.
All right, baby, so what?
But unless we can be perfectly sure of presenting the facts believably, the public will turn against you. They might think on the face of it that you're prosecuting an innocent man.
Mary, I wish you wouldn't be arguing against me in this thing. I've done what I think best in order to get back your engagement ring.
I know you have, Larry, dear, and I love you for it.
As radio changed its role, old favorites faded from the scene. For example, I know that many people shed a quiet tear with Ma Perkins. I suppose our youngsters would say cornball or square.
And now, CBS Radio brings you Ma Perkins. Well, what could be more appropriate today than to turn the clock back to join Ma and the folks at Thanksgiving dinner? Ma and the family have so much to give thanks for. Let's join them all. They haven't yet sat down. In the kitchen, we find Fay and Eddie and Ma. Listen.
Ethel and Willie are so hungry. Come on, honey. Let's get the cranberries. Look at the turkey.
And now, here's Ma again.
Thank you, Dan. This is our broadcast number 7065. I first came here on December 4th, 1933. Thank you for all being so loyal to us these 27 years. The part of Willie has been played right from the beginning by Murray Forbes. Shuffle was played for 25 years by Charles Eggleston, and for the last 2 years by Edwin Wolfe, who was also our director. The Faye you have been hearing these past few years has been Margaret Draper, and the part was played for many years by Rita Ascott. For 15 years, our Evie has been Kay Campbell. Helen Lewis plays Gladys, and Tom Wells has been played by both John Larkin and Casey Allen. Our announcer is Dan Donaldson. Our writer for more than 20 years has been Orrin Tavra. Ma Perkins has always been played by me, Virginia Payne. If you care to write to me, Ma Perkins, I'll try to answer you. Goodbye, and may God bless you.
Another kind of daytime radio program was the interview show. Perhaps you remember two of the most famous as the Noontime Kate Smith Show and Mary Margaret McBride. Now, Mary Margaret McBride is still on radio in many cities. Certainly, she must own a record, for her first broadcast went on the air in New York, May 3rd, 1934. Her guests have ranged from the great political figures the folks in the news.
I don't know whether this is really a respectful way to speak about a vice president, but one of your, one of the boys who do some work around your office, Mr. Vice President Barkley, said to me, doesn't that guy ever get tired? And I said, well, how would I know? He said, well, I didn't mean you to answer the question. It was just one of those rhetorical questions.
Yeah.
He just said that you tire them all out.
Somebody at the meet the press yesterday out in the audience asked me that question, if I never got tired.
What'd you say?
I said I've never had a feeling of fatigue or exhaustion in my life. I've always worked hard, but it may be a bad thing, because if I got tired, I might go off and lie down and rest now and then. But never getting tired, I just keep on.
Uh-huh.
That's my answer, and that's the truth. I never do have a sense of fatigue or exhaustion.
Never in your whole life? I bet you that means you don't worry.
No, I don't, really. I don't mean that I don't think things over seriously, but I've got a philosophical view that worry doesn't solve anything. And they tell me it creates ulcers in the stomach.
Yes, I've known them to get it. Now, Mrs. Barkley, you can tell us whether he really lives for this or whether this is one of those things men say now and then.
No, it really is true. I can't possibly keep up with him, and I can tell you a cute little story about him. Someone told on him when he was campaigning in 1948, either in 48 or 50, and he was touring very, very terrifically heavy schedule over Kentucky in a very small plane, which was piloted by a good friend of his, and a couple of the young men who were helping him, my husband now, were along also. And he'd been hopping all over Kentucky for weeks and speaking here, there, and everywhere, making five and six speeches a day. And he had all the men absolutely beat down. He, of course, feeling perfectly fine. They got in the plane to take off to go on to their next engagement. And the pilot, who's an old friend of my husband, said that he just absolutely was so worn out from his terrific campaign and from trying to keep up with him, with not nearly enough rest for an ordinary, normal person to go on, that he was in had stutter horror. He suddenly came to and realized that he had dozed and found the vice president, Bob Conley, this one. He knows nothing about it whatsoever at all. Absolutely, for just a minute, he didn't quite know what to do. It gave him an awful shock. And he said, oh my, Mr. Vice President. He said, for goodness sake. And my husband said, well, that's all right, Charlie. He said, you look like you were kind of tired and need a little nap. Of course, it was one of those little bitty planes. I must explain it. Almost flying. Yes,
that
it was, Charlie.
Yeah.
He said, you just whipped him down.
Oh, I don't know how you do this. But I certainly would have been a little bit. That means he's never afraid either.
He hasn't heard his song, not once.
Now, back around 1926, radio invented something else, sponsors. Sponsors have provided comedians with more jokes than the Los Angeles mob. Red Skelton made his first radio appearance in 1937 on the Rudy Valley Show. And soon after, he was credited with this comment. The longest word in the English language is the one that follows. And now a word from our sponsor. But one of the reasons both radio and television were able to provide free entertainment of the highest caliber was the advertisers who paid the bill. I'm sure you'll find a chuckle or two in these famous radio commercials. The first you hear is from Interwoven Socks, reputed to be the first singing commercial. The singers are the famed Billy Jones and Ernie Hare, who were known as the Happiness Boys.
How do you do, everybody? How do you do? It is great to say hello to all of you. I'm Billy Jones.
I'm Ernie Hare.
We're the Interwoven there. How do you do?
Rinse-o white and rinse-o bright.
L-A-V-A, L-A-V-A.
This is Sandy Becker saying, keep cooking with Crisco. It's all vegetable. It's digestible.
Longines is not lightly called the world's most honored watch. For Longines watches have won 10 World Fair Grand Prizes and 28 gold medals. Longines watches have also won more honors for accuracy than any other timepiece. Longines, the world's most honored watch, is a product of the Longines Whitnor Watch Company.
Wow! Listen to this. It's bargain time again at Crimson Travel. Starting November 3rd, you can spend an entire week in swinging London or in romantic Paris. As of January 5th, there will also be weekly departures to popular ski resorts in scenic Switzerland. Tour prices are as low as $288. That's right, $288. This includes air transportation by reliable airlines such as BOAC, Air France, and Swissair. Accommodations with private bath or shower, many meals, sightseeing, transfers, gratuities, local taxes, and many special features. For instance, in Paris, you'll see the spectacular show at the world-famous Lido. In London, you'll get excellent theater tickets and a special pass entitling you to free rides on London subway and red double-decker buses. In Switzerland, enjoy unlimited reduced-rate travel with the first-class Swiss holiday ticket. Don't miss the bargain. Sign up now by calling Crimson Travel Service at 868-2600. Crimson Travel Service, 868-2600.
For the answers to any drug-related question, BZ suggests you call Turnoff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 261-2600. One of the greatest names in radio comedy was, of course, Fred Allen. The famous Benny Allen feud went on for years, though Fred and I were close friends. Fred had a sharp wit and a sense of satire that had never been surpassed. We exchanged many visits on radio, Fred to my show and I to his. His ability to ad-lib was phenomenal. And one night, after a particularly hilarious Fred Allen ad-lib, I return this line, which has been quoted time and time again. You wouldn't have said that if my writers were here. Fred's famous Allen's Alley is as fresh today as it was then.
The senator's home.
I'll knock and see what happens.
Somebody, I say, somebody knock.
Yes, I know.
Claghorn's the name, Senator Claghorn, that is.
I know you're from the South.
When I'm in New York, I'll never go to the Yankee Stadium.
Now, wait a minute.
Go to see the Giants unless the South Pole pitches.
Well, look,
I refuse to watch the Dodgers unless Dixie Walker's playing.
Now, wait a minute.
Stop interrupting. Where's your manners?
Manners, I have more.
Try listening. You might learn something.
Listen, all I'll ever learn.
Your tongue's wagging like a blind dog's tail in a meat market.
You're winded, hey?
Just sucking in some air, son.
Well, leave a little. I'm breathing, too, you know. Tell me, Senator, what is Washington doing about coal prevention?
The Senate reconvened just in time.
Yeah?
I was glad to see Senator Aiken back. Aiken back, that's a joke.
I know it's a joke.
That was as funny as that.
Listen, you don't know what it is.
I keep talking to them, and you just sidestep them.
Well, look at that. Now, wait.
Say, you're a regular fast sack. Sack, that is.
Now, you wait. Tell me, cool off now just a second. Do you have a favorite cure for a cold?
I caught a cold last week.
Yeah.
I'd like to ruin my filibuster.
Ruin your filibuster? What did you do?
I took an old southern remedy, son. I drank down 2 buckets of hot mint julep.
You drank 2 buckets of hot mint juleps and you still held the floor?
Held the floor? Son, I couldn't get up off it.
Well, I wonder how Titus Moody is doing this evening.
Howdy, Bob.
Say, Mr. Moody, you look a little tired.
I know. I was up all night. Couldn't get a wink.
You didn't sleep a wink?
No, it wasn't that. Somebody stole my tiddly.
Well, Mr. Moody, tell me, has this cold epidemic hit your farm?
My wife had a nasty cold.
Did you call the doctor?
Yeah. Call down quick. Give her sulfur and molasses. Put in too much sulfur.
Well, how can you tell he gave her too much sulfur?
When my wife sits in the dark, she glows.
Well, are you doing anything about it?
Why, Senator Claghorn, a foreigner next door, he sent me over a bucket of hot mint julep.
For your wife?
No, for me. Tonight I'm getting lit up to keep her company. Go on, Bob.
Looks as though Titus is going to get lit up on his weekend. Well, let's see what a knock here will start.
No.
Mrs. Nussbaum.
You're expecting maybe two la-lula-lula banquets. No.
Tell me, Mrs. N., have you had any colds in your house?
My husband, Pierre, is sick.
Oh, really?
They are maybe sending him to a clinic. The Meyer brothers.
Oh, the Meyer brothers. Well, didn't Pierre try any cold remedies?
Every day is a new remedy. First, he is bringing home fruit to drink in fruit juices.
What kind?
Oranges, grapefruit, tambourines.
Well, how long did he drink the fruit juices?
One day. Then Pierre is opening up the window and throwing out the fruit.
Oh, he had another remedy?
Vitamin from vegetables.
Oh, good.
He's bringing home carrots, sprinkle beans, and rutabago.
How long did he try vitamins?
One day.
One day again.
Pierre is opening up the window and throwing out the vegetables.
He had yet another remedy?
Absolute rest. You're staying in bed.
Uh-huh.
I am bringing meals. I'm bringing pills. I'm bringing hot water bottles.
Well, how long did this last?
One day.
And then?
I am opening up the window and throwing out Pierre.
The juiciest way to broil a steak, or any meat for that matter, is to broil both sides at once. And Westinghouse does it with no-turn speed broil. Only the Westinghouse range has 2 broiling elements, one above and one just below. The natural juices are quickly sealed inside, making any meat taste just great, and broiling takes half the time. The Westinghouse no-turn speed broil means less spattering, too, but don't worry about cleaning up. This Westinghouse range has a self-cleaning oven that does the job for you. There's no guesswork. You just set the controls, and Westinghouse cleans itself faster than any other electric range. To do this job, it uses, at 2 cents per kilowatt hour, less than 8 cents worth of electricity. The top of the range is easily cleaned because it has
plug-out cooking elements. You'll find everything you've been looking for in a Westinghouse self-cleaning electric range. You can be sure if it's Westinghouse.
Okay, 254-5678, we're back on the air. Hello? Hello, WBZ? Hello? Hello?
Is this WBZ?
Yes.
Oh, it's been a long time to get you. This is a Larry Glick show.
Yes.
All right. I suppose you screen people, don't you?
I'm Larry Glick. I screen them.
You're Larry Glick.
Let me check. Yes.
Well, you sound so different.
I am different.
Well, I'm calling to, I don't know if you mentioned it before tonight, but I believe this is your daughter's birthday.
You son of a gun. That's right. September 26th, it is my daughter's birthday.
Right.
Who are you?
My name is Sterling.
Sterling?
Right.
Rod?
Royal.
Royal Sterling?
Yes.
Where are you calling from, Royal Sterling?
Warwick, Rhode Island, right next to a lighthouse.
All right, what, next to a lighthouse? Are you a lighthouse keeper?
No, sometimes I am.
Royal, is that really name, Royal Sterling?
That's right.
What a classy name.
Like that, do
you? Royal, yes I do. What do you do, Royal Sterling?
Well, I just retired in June.
From where?
From my business in Rhode Island.
What kind of a business?
Well, I imported pumice from Greece by the shipload.
Yes.
And we make it into a lightweight building unit.
A lightweight what?
Building unit. Building block.
Oh.
Building block. A lot of them in the Boston area.
I don't quite understand it.
And out at Brandeis and all over.
What do you do with it now?
I just retired in June.
No, I mean, what do you do with this material?
We make it into a building block.
Building blocks. By Jove.
And they're going in around Boston there in many of the large buildings.
Now, what do you do with your life now, Royal Sterling?
Well, I go fishing a lot. I was out deep sea fishing Saturday. And we got a lot of bluefish. But I was fishing tonight by the lighthouse here. And I go to Florida in the winter.
Oh.
Down there.
Hey, you've got a good life, Royal Sterling.
Pretty good.
Where do you go to Florida?
I go to Stewart.
Where is that?
That's 120 miles north of Miami.
And then in the summer you come back here to Rhode Island?
In Rhode Island, right.
You son of a gun.
Something I wanted to mention about a year ago, you were told about this German fellow in Mexico who performed operations who never had any education.
No, that was in South America. That was in, I think it was in Brazil. That's what it was, Brazil.
And the same night, you had a call from a woman in, I think it was Indianapolis, who told you about the wonder healers of the Philippines.
Well, I don't remember that.
No? Well, I found the book last winter, and it's a marvelous book. It tells about these operations they perform without surgery.
Did you read the book?
I read the book. There's a number of these healers in the Philippines who just pass their hand over the patient, and the patient opens up, and they've had any number of investigators from the United States go over there and take movies and report on it.
Royal Sterling, you know what I'd like to do?
What?
May I call you back? Let's see, where am I here? I have the news coming up, and then I have a guest. Down in Knoxville,
Tennessee.
Wait a minute. Here's Royal. Hello, Royal?
Yes.
You stay on and then give Muck the number and we'll call you back in a while, okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
so long. Royal Sterling. Stay tuned for the Royal Sterling Show. What a classy name. Bob, is that that's a good name, is it? Royal Sterling. Let's see. Royal Sterling Gleck. No, that doesn't go. Kyle, how about Royal D'Souza?
Good morning.
Royal D'Souza?
This is Carl D'Souza, and I'll be seeing you in 3 hours on Radio 103.
Royal Glick Show. No. The Spirit of New England, WBZ Boston Group W, Westinghouse Broadcasting. It's 68 degrees in Boston. Tonight's low will be around 66. I'm Streeter Glick, WBZ News. The prime ministers of Japan and China have pledged to reestablish diplomatic relations between their nations. Their words came Monday night at a banquet in Peking where they have held the first talks on normalizing relations. Japanese Prime Minister Tanaka told Zhou Enlai of China that it's absolutely necessary to establish normal relations. Norway has a political crisis with the resignation of the labor movement of Prime Minister Trygve Bratteli. Norwegian vote has rejected by nearly 54% Bratteli's request for authority to join the expanded European common market. The 62-year-old prime minister said that unless final tabulations change the outcome, his government will resign. U.S. Secretary of State William Rogers discussed a broad range of issues Monday with Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko. Included was the U.S. proposal for a treaty against international terrorism. Earlier, Rogers addressed the U.N. General Assembly requesting immediate action against worldwide violence and airplane hijacking. A besieged battalion of South Vietnamese soldiers has been reached by border rangers, the former Green Beret-trained mercenaries. Military sources say the rangers early today broke through a ring of North Vietnamese to reach the battalion, which had been isolated in a former special forces camp along the central coast for 9 days. In Saigon, security officials plan to check for weapons every vehicle without a clearly visible license. Senators George McGovern and Hubert Humphrey went for a walking tour through the Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco late Monday. The two, along with Mayor Joseph Alioto, were mobbed by a howling and shoving crowd as they made their way to a seafood restaurant. McGovern opened a West Coast campaign tour Monday by reiterating his promise to cut defense spending by $30 billion. WBZ News Time, 2.5 minutes after 3.
For the answers to any drug-related question, BZ suggests you call Turnoff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 261-2600.
The president of the International Longshoremen's Association, Thomas Gleason, has broken with his union's traditional support of Democrats. Gleason yesterday endorsed President Nixon for re-election on behalf of his 115,000-member union. Gleason said that he would talk to AFL-CIO President George Meany, who has refused to endorse anyone in this year's presidential race. A Philippines official says martial law in his country may last as long as 2 years. The executive secretary to President Ferdinand Marcos is in Washington for the World Bank Conference. He told reporters the government was considering declaring martial law as far back as 2 years ago. Marcos issued the proclamation on Friday, saying that it was necessary because of a communist plot to overthrow his government. Weather for Boston and vicinity. For the rest of this morning, partly cloudy, lowest temperatures in the low 60s. Tuesday, considerable cloudiness, warm and humid, highest temperatures 75 to 80 degrees. Tuesday night, chance of showers, lowest temperatures in the 60s. Wednesday, chance of showers or thunderstorms, followed by partial clearing and turning cooler. Highest temperatures in the 70s. Right now in Boston, it's 68 degrees. High sports fans on the BZ scoreboard. In pro football, Kansas City 20, New Orleans 17. In Major League Baseball, California 2, Texas 1. And San Diego Padres 5, Los Angeles Dodgers 3. And that's it, sports fans. The top story of the hour. The prime ministers of Japan and China have pledged to reestablish diplomatic relations between their nations. And that's the 3 o'clock WBZ report. I'm Streeter Glick, WBZ News. Avoid the October 15th rush and get your fall inspection sticker now. And once again, back to the Larry Glick Show. And we should have, I guess, punched up. Former Assistant Attorney General Carl Greenwell, now retired from the law practice. He's down in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll get the story on what he's doing right now. Is he all punched up? Hello, Mr. Carl Greenwell.
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Larry Glick. You're on the air. Thank you very much for coming on with us.
Yes, sir. You're quite welcome.
Thank you. Now, you... You've given up the law practice, and you're doing something brand new, or, I mean, new as far as you're concerned for a living, right? Do you do this hypnosis as a living?
Yes, sir, I do.
Well, tell me about what you're doing now.
I practice hypnosis. It's mostly hypnosis that cases that are referred to me from physicians.
Right.
I've been doing that for about 10 or 12 years.
What kind of cases do you get referred to you?
You name it. Most all kinds. Of course, naturally, most of them, I'd say the majority of them, are cases involving emotional trouble that are referred to me by physicians. Cases dealing with phobias, neurosis, such things. That anything from a child bedwetting, a lady biting her nails, migraine headaches. In other words, cases that are what a doctor would call psychosomatic or functional disorders that involve no physical trauma.
Now, how about the state of Tennessee? Do they have hypnotists that are licensed?
No, sir. They do. They have you can get a license. But the cost is absolutely beyond $1,500 a year.
Why is it so high?
Several reasons. One reason, it's an effort, I think, or I believe, that the legislature was trying to outlaw.
Wait a minute. Mr. Greenwell?
Yes, sir.
Can you speak a little louder? My engineer says...
Yes, sir.
Oh, wait a minute. My engineer says maybe we can call you back on another line.
Okay.
Would you hang up? We'll call you right back.
Well.
Okay, thank you. Muck, try him on this. What line is he going to call on? This line? Very good. Okay. Could you hear? I mean, how distorted was it, Bob? Could you understand what he said? Could you understand what he said? It wasn't good. Okay. Well, we'll call him right back because we want people, I mean, if we have a guest on, by Jove, we want people to be able to understand each and every word just like it's a jewel, right? Well, we got a person on who's doing something interesting. On town crier while we're getting him back. The annual rummage sale of the Union Church in Waubun will be held from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. on Wednesday, September 27th, at the corner of Beacon Street and Collins Road in Waubun, W-A-B-A-N, Waubun. Send your announcement on a postcard 2 weeks in advance to Town Crier, WBZ, Boston, 02134. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Let's see if that's a little bit better. How come we can't get a clear line down to Tennessee?
I don't know. I seem to hear you very well.
Okay. Oh, my engineer says that's better. Okay, now, you were saying that it costs about $1,500 a year to get a license, and then I asked you why. So would you repeat that, Mr. Greenwell?
Yes, sir. In my opinion, caused by several years ago, the legislature imposed that high penalty in an effort to outlaw stage hypnotists. At that time, that's several years ago, in the late 50s, I believe it was, some amateur hypnotist here put on a stage show in one of the little towns in Upper East Tennessee, and he had a very unfortunate thing happen. He hypnotized a little girl, about 13 years old, with heavy phobia of she's terribly afraid of snakes. And this amateur stage hypnotist hypnotized her and hallucinated her into a pit of poisonous snakes. She immediately went into hysterics.
Right.
And he did the wrong thing first, not knowing how to handle the situation. He immediately awakened her.
Yeah.
When he should have perhaps just eased her out, maybe loosened her out of the snake pit into a flower garden or something, you know. And then, so she's quiet, and then awakened her.
But when she awakened, she was hysterical, still a mysterious. And he didn't know what to do or how to handle the situation. And finally had to get a psychiatrist from Mossville here about 2 days later to go up over the little town and get her out of this hysterics that she'd been in for about 2 days. And the legislature did that. I imagine that is why they did it.
Well, how do they allow you to practice then?
Sir?
How do they allow you to practice?
Well, I, in the first place, now, I don't do hypnosis for entertainment.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Oh, to be a stage hypnotist.
Yes. The only way, now, I do do a great deal of lecturing to schools and civic clubs and so on. At the lecture, I always follow the little demonstration, which goes fine. Here in Knoxville, in Knox County, we teach psychology in senior years of high school. And those youngsters just eat it up. I do several demonstrations every year. But, of course, that's free. That's just for the benefit of the children.
I see. Now, when a doctor, let's say a medical doctor, refers a patient to you, if it's too personal, you don't have to answer. Sometimes I forget whether they're too personal, but, like, do you have a standard fee or... for so much a visit or for so many sessions, or how do you work this?
Of course, I always call them a subject because I'm not a doctor.
You what?
I call them a subject instead of patient.
Yeah, right.
The doctor sends me his patient.
Right.
And to me, they're my subject.
Right.
Now, your question was, is how do I treat them, or what you say?
Yes. I mean, what about the charge? I mean, do they pay the doctor, and does the doctor pay you, or do they pay you?
They pay me directly.
Right. Now, do you charge them for a series of sessions or per visit?
So much as sessions. You might say a visit, either whichever way
it is. And how long is a visit, usually?
Well, it varies. It's anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour and a half, perhaps maybe sometimes 2 hours. The first time, it's always a little lengthy because I get a complete case history. And then after that, they run from 45 minutes, average, I'd say.
Now, what if a person, do you have a shingle outside? What if? Can a person come in off the street, let's say, to stop cigarette smoking or for weight reduction?
No, sir, I don't, because I operate entirely in my own home. I have my office in my own home.
Right.
And I live out in the country.
Oh, I see. So it's all referral.
Sir?
It's all referral.
Yes, sir. Well, not all of it. Any case that doesn't involve a medical question, I can take without a referral. For instance, the University of Tennessee is located here, and many of the students, not many of them, I'll say some every year, though, they come to me to help them to accelerate the learning process. Same way with some of the high school students. And then I have various problems. I'm very careful, though. We take the ladies like to come use hypnosis, lose weight that way. But I always require a medical referral for that. The same, quit smoking cigarettes. And just so many things.
Well, what about Mr. Greenwell? Do you practice self-hypnosis at all? And if you do practice self-hypnosis, tell me how you used it.
Did I practice what?
Self-hypnosis, auto-suggestion.
Well, I just You say, have I used it?
Yes. Do you use it, and how, if you have?
I do use it. And to give you, I guess, one of the best illustrations of it, in 1968, I had a severe bump on my head. And next day, I found myself going blind in the left eye. And I went to an eye specialist. He diagnosed it as a detached retina. And said it would involve a major operation to reattach the retina. And it'd take some 3 hours surgery. On my eye, I couldn't do that because of a respiratory ailment that I have, which is emphysema. That precludes me from taking chemical anesthesia. And I explained that to him, and he said, well, he couldn't do it with local anesthesia because it would be too lengthy. He suggested that I go to Atlanta, Georgia, where they had a team that did those operations. They could, 3 or 4 of them, knowing just what to do and when to do it, could do it in about, he said, about an hour or 45 minutes, something like that. He suggested I fly to Atlanta, and he wanted to make make all the arrangements right then. I had to think of a nationally known eye surgeon that was in Johnson City, Tennessee. That's a little city about 100 miles east of here. Went back home and called him, and he said, come up and see what he could do. However, I carefully left out the respiratory ailment that I had. I drove up there, or at least my daughter and housekeeper drove me up there. They verified the diagnosis was a detached retina, and I also found that I had a long tear in the retina. And they wanted to operate right at once, but the time was at least. Should be done before the retina stripped over the cells and destroyed them. Yeah, of course, I told him to go ahead, and then came the thing about the anesthesia. And I told him that I couldn't take anesthesia, chemical anesthesia. But I assured him that I would. I could hypnotize myself and give them to all the time they wanted in order to operate with hypnotic anesthesia. Well, of course, that more or less floored them because they just never heard of such thing as that. They called in a local medical doctor there who gave an examination for $25 worth and said he wouldn't recommend chemical anesthesia under any circumstances in my case. And they were going to send me home, and I talked them into letting me try. And
what year was this, Mr. Greenwell?
Yes, sir.
What year was this?
1968, in October 1968.
Okay.
At a hospital, it was Johnson City Eye Hospital.
Right.
And the surgeon was Dr. McKee. He is nationally known as an eye surgeon. And well, to make a long story short, they told me to go ahead. And they wrote, I went into the operating room. They rolled me up there, and they're on the operating table, and I'll let one of the nurses use a small light as a fixation object. I wrote out how to awaken me on the back of one of my business cards, and gave it to one of the surgeons, Dr. McKee, and Dr. Sawyer were the surgeons. Wrote out how to awaken me. And then with that data, that nurse holding the light, I went into hypnosis. And they put sewed on my eye for more than 2 hours with anesthesia only from the self-hypnosis.
What method did you use to deepen yourself? What method did you use?
Well, I used a method that I had been taught when I studied hypnosis at the Integral Training Center by Harry Herons.
Yeah, right. I know him.
You do?
Yes.
Well, you're familiar then with his system of self-hypnosis. They call it the Heron system.
Right. What method? There are many, though. Which method did you use?
Correct.
What method did you use?
Well, you mean the...
Yes.
Well, to begin with, of course, in learning it, you achieve what we call it takes 21 days to learn it. I mean, to practice every night. Method of counting and down and breathing and so on. And at the end, you simply count from 5 down to 1, and then implanting yourself in your conscious whatever suggestion you want to, let it be anesthesia or stop pain or whatever. And to awaken you just simply count back up from 1 to 5. Up.
Right. What?
But after many years of practice, I can do that instantly without going through all the rigmarole that you learn when you're studying it after practicing so many years.
What?
But you don't. The big thing about to create a stir among the hypnotic world was not with me doing that, or the anesthesia, but the fact that I was able to stay in self-hypnosis for 2 hours and something, because therefore I'd never stayed in longer than three or four or five minutes, because that's ample time to give yourself most of the suggestions you'd ever want to.
That's right. The reason why I asked, I use self-hypnosis, you know, like the 2, 3, 4, or 5 minutes, but I've never done it for that long a time.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the only thing that made a stir. Now, Harry Herons and M.F. Bubeck, clinical psychologist, they wrote a book. You're probably familiar with it if you studied hypnosis. It's the Handbook of Professional Hypnosis by Herons and Bubeck.
Yeah, I have it. Yes.
Well, if you found on the back of that... case history of my eye operation, and there's also another there's a picture of me giving a demonstration at Miami Beach, Florida. Now that was back, I mean the demonstration was back in 1966, I believe it was, the convention of the Association of Advanced
Yeah, I belong to that. I remember that myself.
Well, that was in Florida. I believe it was in 1966. I believe that's the year the convention was there. I know this year it's going to be at Orlando, Florida.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Grewell, I'm going to attend a seminar with Dr. William Jennings Bryan out in Las Vegas in November. I've never attended one of his. I interviewed him the other night in France. He's out. He has a group over there. I never have, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm going out there. I think it's November 10th, 11th, and 12th.
And you're going to Las Vegas?
Yes.
Well, I believe it. Isn't that the course on... sex treatment of sex disorders?
I don't think so. I think this is going to be on... this is going to be open to medical and lay people.
Well, he's a great fella. I've known him for several years. And in fact, he's just finished a new book not long ago. The title of it is The Chosen Ones.
I have that, but I haven't read it. He sent it to me, but I haven't read it yet.
The legal profession.
Right.
He, as you may know, I He's the one that helped Green, the most famous criminal lawyers.
Right.
In law pursuits, especially in picking jewelries.
Right, right.
I believe he's a product of your city, F.D. Bailey.
That's right. I was talking to Mr. Bailey the other day, and he spoke very highly of Dr. William James Bryan.
Bryan has helped him in several cases, including, I think, one of them, the Boston Strangler.
That's right.
And Dr. Carl Capolino.
Right. Of both those cases. As a matter of fact, Dr. Bryan was telling us that he was in the cell, and he had hypnotized this fellow who was allegedly the Boston Strangler. And they started to choke him. And he gave them the post-hypnotic suggestion previously, you know, that whenever he gave them the word sleep, that he would go back to sleep. And then this fellow actually literally started to choke him, and he gave him that the command to sleep, and he went back.
Uh-huh. Well, he's great. No doubt about that. And one of his instructors is a dental surgeon, Dr. Frost. Dr. Garland F. Frost. He's a retired, I believe, some high officer in the Navy, where he practiced dental surgery. But he's a great teacher, too.